This isn't just a podcast about leadership. It's about the patterns that run us, the scripts we inherit, and the beliefs we reinforce without even realizing it. We've watched this work rekindle marriages, renew parents' connections with their kids, and reimagine the future of businesses. So if you've ever found yourself asking, "Am I becoming the person I'm supposed to be?" you're in the right place. This is In the Arena, conversations about what it really means to live and lead well. Welcome to In the Arena. My name is Sean Dyke, managing partner here at Door 2. So one of the things that we've noticed over the years in our work is that many of the leaders we're fortunate enough to work with are self-admittedly what is known as an insecure overachiever. And what we get to do in our work is help them identify where they get their self-worth from. Joining me today is podcast regular Mr. Chris Stemp to kind of talk through a more meaty sort of complex discussion around this one.
Yeah. And admittedly, I kind of want to be here just to learn from you, right? Yeah. You're the one having these calls, getting the midnight texts from colleagues, friends, clients about these types of things. An insecure overachiever, I think on its face, is something a lot of people either identify with or question. What does that mean? Do I fall into it? So given what you see, how would you define insecure overachiever and what does it look like?
Yeah, it probably doesn't have a perfectly clean definition, does it? And in some ways, what I think is interesting about this idea is the vast majority of people that are successful would 100% call themselves an overachiever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we drop the word insecure in front of that,
good point.
There's a lot of people that are like, no, that's not me. I'm not. I'm quite good in what I'm doing. Many that have heard the phrase, many that know what it is, their start an honest recognition of that truth. So what is insecure overachiever? It's an individual that tends to orient their self-worth or their value in the work accomplishments they do. So if I do enough, if I sell enough, if I earn enough, of course, being this loose and arbitrary space, mm-hmm. then I am enough. So my attribution of my worth is connected to the output of my work product.
Mm, got it. Okay. And now, how do I then differentiate between, well, I'm just motivated, I'm just achievement driven, I'm just goal oriented, to insecure overachiever? And in truth, I think you would admit that the labeling of it isn't what matters.
No.
But what does matter?
Yeah, I think what matters out of the gate is the recognition that if this is something that I have, which is what's funny about this, we've talked about this before. I think we talked about one of the times whenever, like, what's the dialogue behind the closed door?
Mm-hmm.
Is that when the individual and you socialize this concept with them, their willingness to say, like, well, that's totally me, right? Mm. And honestly, isn't that like most people?
Right.
And I think you and I talked a little bit about if you look at, like, well, what percentage of people drop into this category on really, you know, executives that move into these leadership ranks. And I think we said that if you meant this by individuals that orient their self-worth in their work product, that feel a need to burn the candle at both ends, that are just perpetually in pursuit of bigger, better, faster,
mm-hmm.
it's materially the vast majority of leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that they're not just goal-driven or that I'm not in pursuit of excellence? It doesn't mean that, because materially you would kind of look the same on some level. Part of it is underlying a bit of you knowing. So let me give this example. There's a guy that I work with, that I coach, that, I mean, anybody that just had observation of him would say, like, the human's incredible. Mm-hmm. Like what they've accomplished, their recall capacity, their collective capability of organizational knowledge, their family life, the Instagram perfect realities that they get to experience that other people look on and see. I mean, we would all look at him and say, like, well, that's incredible. This person's mm-hmm. amazing. And he is. Yet behind the closed doors, when I chat with him, there's a perpetual fear of failing, feeling like I'm just not doing it right, feeling mm-hmm. like I'm not doing enough.
So the achievement is not fulfilling the self-worth.
No,
in this
it's in essence masking it on some levels. So
right.
I think that's kind of one of the complicated spaces that we work in. When I other orient my value. I misattribute my self-worth or my value to the work that I'm doing. I just need to do more work and more work and more work. Mm-hmm. And as I execute and as I do those things, I get a hit of some value, but I'm not fixing. All that does materially is demonstrate my ability to be productive. It's not addressing or tending to some of the fractures that we have in identity.
I could imagine somebody thinking, yeah, it's the cross I bear, but it definitely makes me productive.
Sure.
So do I want to fault the thing that got me here? And then if you try to highlight that for them, how are you adding value in that moment or in their role as a leader of an organization?
Yeah. Oh, there's a few things in that. So let's look at, in my earlier years, how that internal drive actually probably served me as an individual contributor and as an early leader, because that showing up in me did translate into, I get a lot done.
Right.
I mean, one could argue that companies might seek insecure overachievers.
Wait, almost weaponize it unintentionally against themselves to an extent, you think?
Yeah, because on some level, I hire this individual that works 14 hours a day,
exactly,
burns through it, gets it done, execute. I mean, they're just crushing it all right. the time. So as an individual contributor, let's go there. And we can even take that back further, high school, elementary school, wherever those things are. When I'm doing those things, the adverse effect is probably only personally felt. I don't have an adverse effect on people around me yet.
Right.
I know it because I've got a felt sense of dissatisfaction that grows in me. I'm trying to do, but I'm not actually feeling that headspace, right? So we talked about this way early on, whenever there's that echo and that dissent between my worth and my accomplishment, I can just feel this kind of delta in there. But as an individual contributor, if I'm coaching somebody in that space, I'm primarily going to be working with them on their felt level of satisfaction and accomplishment. And do they consistently feel dissatisfied, empty, treadmill? Just doing it again and again and again. There's the other vantage point, which is once I lead people. Before I jump there, any chase on that one?
Well, actually, I just want to double down. Let's say you're working with coaching, mentoring an individual contributor. The position doesn't fully matter. It's just semantics. But how do you feel is potentially the most important thing?
Yeah.
If we really zoom out. Now, we would even say an evolved organization would like to make sure that their people feel good about Absolutely. What they're doing. And yeah. let's say you have that high performer working 14 hours a day or whatever it is. And they say, yeah, I'm crushing it. And you go, I know they're slating you for a leadership position. And they go, I struggle to wake up every morning. And they don't know why. This is where that line becomes important. Am I trying to fill a hole with achievement or accomplishment that needs to be filled
something else
elsewhere?
This is misattribution of value,
right?
So we will come to that. Actually, let's link into what it looks like when you're in a leadership role, and we'll circle okay. back around yeah. to those two things, yes. two statements. One of these individuals, I know will hear this. The other one may not. They were both in leadership roles. I'm coaching one of them. Another one I was in a session with. The person that I'm coaching, I got on a call with, and they say to me, you're going to be upset with me. And I said, why am I going to be upset with you? And they said, because I had to open my car door at a stoplight this morning and throw up because the felt level of anxiety, anxiousness, stress, pressure, self-applied that I've got to do. By the way, that's not only there. That's also as the room mom. That's also as right. the needing to look perfect in the family systems. That's when I'm hosting all those things
yeah.
that I am trying to get self-worth and value through my work product. Mm. The other individual was a factory manager in a large organization. He took over a really poor running factory, and then he got it to the best running factory. And so he won the worst to first award among like 30 factories. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, the guy's a rock star. It's amazing. And that's what we all saw. And we're sitting at an event, and I'm sitting with him outside of a fire. And he said, for nearly a year, I woke up every morning and threw up before I went to work.
Wow.
Because the felt pressure that I now, in order for me to be perceived as valuable and worthy, I must sustain and maintain this level of pressure, this level of performance. That is a hell of a burden that we apply. And many of us apply it.
I think for those listening, you know, you're driving along, you're mowing the lawn, whatever it is, it's kind of easy to go, yeah, I mean, I like to accomplish stuff, but I don't, tying your self-worth seems like a pretty deep, you know, event here. In reality, how often do we do that and not even recognize we've done it?
Yes.
And that's what you're saying.
Correct.
That's part of your job is to notice it from that third party vantage point.
Yeah, this is oftentimes not done with intentional malice
right.
to self.
Right.
Right. It's the self-critic over the self-coach that tends to show up internally with it. We're just not even aware that we're in pursuit of that. So link back to as a manager or as a leader, what's the adverse reality tied into this? Because we said with the individual contributor, really, it's in a lot of ways, primarily self-experience.
Yeah.
In truth, there's probably a radiance to it for those around you. But in a leadership role, if you're in a spot where the activity work you're leading and or doing is more oriented around scratching an itch you personally have in order to get your needs met and your self-worth experienced, are we misdirecting activity? Are we misdirecting the org? Are we disabling or disengaging the people that we lead at a cost because we need to get a need met? And I will tell you, most of the time, people are not aware of that. It's not a thought that they necessarily have.
Yeah.
So if you jump all the way to the end of a career arc, we've talked about this. When I get to coach someone into retirement or our team coaches someone into retirement, this is one of the biggest things we have to work toward,
mm-hmm.
which is, hey, in 6 months, you will no longer have a business card with a title. You will no longer have a team. You will no longer have an individual execution of something. The things that you needed to accomplish or achieve that you used as a marker for your value
mm-hmm.
will not be there anymore.
Yep.
Why do we think people that drop into retirement, there's so much depression tied yeah. into it and lost
yeah.
in what they're doing? Because we've gone through that work. Okay, so why would you use this in a coaching space? Like, why would we approach it this way? So there's a gentleman I just started working with. He's incredible, massive executor, has a series of priorities and plans for the team to execute against. None of them are wrong for the team to execute against, but they're also his goals. And when you are in a spot of insecure overachievement, it is highly improbable that you will not achieve the goal. You're
right.
going to pursue it.
Right.
So I asked him, so that is your goals as a leader is to deliver on those five. And he said, well, no, not really. And I said, well, what are your goals? And he said, well, ultimately, I want to leave an incredibly competent, capable team that has a legacy of me growing them into this self-sustaining group. I said, great. So where are your goals? Right. None of his goals are directing him toward that behavior.
Got it.
So he's going to pursue accomplishment of the task because it scratches the itch. So number one, that's cool. Number two, let's create a list of things that you're going to do that are better serve you in your collective experience. And we then got to take the more uncomfortable step back, which is even that. Now I've reoriented a set of activities that I'm going to do to serve a broader purpose. That's still great.
Yep.
But it's still going back to you're attempting to execute work mm-hmm. to find self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
So the question I asked him really genuinely was, do you know why you need to do this? What is compelling you to want to do that? Now, that's going to sound simple on face value, but if we just pause for a second, I won't do this to you real time. We could do this to each other. But if we said, like, why are you doing what you do?
Right.
You would give me initially a couple of things that are true, accurate, but incomplete. And then if we dug a little deeper into that, and then a little deeper into that, we would get to a real core of like, why do I do these things that I need to do? So in our coaching work around this idea, when I have someone that really embodies insecure overachiever, the internal language I often use is trying to figure out what the ghosts they're chasing are. They're in pursuit of a feeling state. They're in pursuit of an acknowledgement from someone in some way that has them feel whole. So there's two questions I ask. They sound really, really easy. I ask them not to answer them on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
And then they almost always say, well, I think I can. I say, great, but still take it back. If you've got a spouse, chat with them. Question number one, is, do you know what you need to hear in order to know that you're enough? Now, somebody might say, wow, that sounds super fluffy in what we're doing. That sounds more like you're sitting and laying on a couch than you are in an executive coaching situation. Mm-hmm. But if we're unaware of what's driving what we're doing, we drop into a lot of autopilot activity, doing things, serving a need we're not even aware we have.
Mm-hmm.
So question number one, do you know what you need to hear? The second one, which is probably more complicated, is from who? Whether we want to believe it or not, the vast majority of us have heroes in our lives that we want to admire us, that we want to be proud of us, that we want to say, nice job.
Mm-hmm.
And it's often those individuals that we're pursuing acknowledgement from around the things that we're doing. I'll pause.
I think those two questions, extremely powerful and always pertinent. And there is a additional component, which is, what do they need to hear from themselves? I think a lot of people would say that motivation to accomplish, that drive, is part of a want to not just feel valued, but to be valuable.
Yeah.
I get that people might want to be filling a hole somehow, and that's a unhealthy use of their skills. But in the same vein, we all need to be driven to accomplish by something, or else we could squander our talents. So what do we replace it with?
Okay, so a couple of fun things. One, and you actually hit on something that's pretty fun that usually doesn't come up later till coaching. I asked two questions, right? What do you need to hear? Who do you need to hear it from? That second question often is self.
Ah, I see. Okay. So that person can be you.
Correct.
You coach towards
in an
that.
Ideal world, that person ought to be you, so that we're not perpetually other orienting self-worth. Now, this is really hard, right? Yeah. You and I, relatively healthy folks.
Right.
We also worked on it. Yeah. Genuinely appreciate what our wife has to say about us.
Yeah.
That matters.
Yeah.
We have friends. We have colleagues. What you think about me matters to me.
Yep.
Like, that does matter.
Yeah.
My headspace is never that you should just dismiss the perception and the experience of others with you. But if we pursue them at a place that we have such emotional and or mental fragility that unless those individuals give me the gold star that I am not worthy, then we create a disparity in worth that's just really pronounced.
Those two questions allow you to first say, what wounds do I have that are not serving me? And then if you can work through that, work past that, acknowledge it, et cetera, then you may have the space to say, then what is my internal dialogue?
Yes.
But you might have to go through the other one first.
Yeah, 100%. And I think what's funny in this space too is a lot of times people have to be ready for this conversation.
Right.
So an interesting space is, like, it could be so easy if you're listening to this spot to be like, oh, I don't need to discuss my inner child. That's not what we're doing. We're looking at, like, you heard messages as you grew up.
Right.
And those messages formed in you. Yep. Beliefs you have about yourself and others.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this as, you know, the contracts that you signed that you're unaware of, that you mentally signed a contract around value, around felt levels of accomplishment that maybe you should have not have signed because you did not read the small print inside of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in those spaces that I'm wanting people to look toward, because as we talk about, and we know inside of this idea of that leadership chain, we have unconscious patterns of thought that drive us. Those come from something. Mm-hmm. They're existing from somewhere. We want to create awareness of for the individual to know, where is that coming from for me? So it's improbable that an insecure overachiever is going to stop becoming an overachiever. I don't want that.
Right.
I want them to become a secure overachiever.
There's a couple of things you said that I have to highlight. One, we've said this many times, primary way we define leadership, skillful use of influence.
Yep.
Can you skillfully influence your team if you are subconsciously driven by an insecurity, a need to accomplish, right? So think about how you're going to lead said team with that. There's also the element to what you just said of you will be more effective in your achievement if there's a solid foundation.
And it is the headspace that says, like, with confidence, not arrogance. So ego, I think, has two definitions. One is an overinflated sense of self-importance.
Mm-hmm.
The other is appropriate pride in yourself. So matters of ego are curious in this space, because when you have that complex insecurity around ego, where you've got actions that you're doing that are hoping to serve this gap we have in identity, this mm-hmm. hole we need to fill, that becomes really insatiable. And then the other part that ties into this, I have to give this to Daniel Holden, CHRO of Nestle. He gave me a phrase the other day that I just was like, this is brilliant. He said, I don't know if it's his or he got it from somewhere, but he gets it in my eyes. He said, uncommunicated expectations are premeditated grievances.
Say it again.
Uncommunicated expectations are premeditated grievances.
Because I know I want something, and when it doesn't happen, I'm going to get mad,
about it. But I probably also didn't tell you about that.
Of course.
So right? I'm leading individuals and I know I need these things to happen. Well, why do I need these things to happen? Because I need them to satisfy my issues and my itch, the things that I need inside
there
of the space.
There you go.
So that thing needs to be executed and accomplished. Am I saying it needs to be executed or accomplished because of the grander purpose of the business execution? And then maybe the individual doesn't feel that same kind of need state around it versus situations where it's an articulation of this matters to me. Like it's important to me. Like think about if I came to you and I said, hey, Chris, I'd really love this thing to get done because I think it would be better for door two. Mm-hmm. I think you would lock in and you would do it.
100%.
But I think, tell me I'm wrong, mm-hmm. that if I came to you and said, hey, I really need this thing to be done because, well, in truth, man, it just personally matters to me. Like, I feel like it will help me to feel like the pursuit of my dreams are better realized.
Sure.
I'm assuming you'd be more inclined to help serve that second one inside of it.
I actually want to step back, and I was trying not to personalize this, so I'll say it so that those listening and watching, I actually think either from you would resonate almost the exact same, but it's due to the prior relationship building done in a, what I think is a strong leadership way.
Yeah.
This is where I was going with that, is the leader who approaches from insecure overachiever ideals might say, hey, I need you to do this. You got to do this. We need more. And then I, or the people you lead, would drop into the fervor of trying to meet that.
Yeah.
But once the foundation is set, it makes your job a little easier.
A lot easier.
So I kind of think it's dependent up front.
I agree.
On how
and
you
I think in those spots,
up.
You know where it's coming from.
Right.
So I'll give an add-in that's kind of this echo in the back of my mind around this. I'm coaching a guy that is just killing it, but it's just feeling so like he's just failing. And it was one of the weirdest things for me because everything was winning.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was winning. And he just was living in this self-deprecating place constantly. So I got really curious about matters of ego. Like why, what happens that either overinflates somebody's sense of self-importance or undervalues it? Like where does that come from? And so the founder of our firm, Brad Spencer, turned me onto a book. It's a small little book, got some weird controversies tied around it, but ultimately that's not the point. The title of the book is Why Am I Afraid to Tell You Who I Am? And probably in my eyes, one of the coolest parts about the story of this book, and it's early in the chapter, in the introduction, the author said he was on a plane having a conversation with somebody, and it comes up that he's going to write a book. He's not an author normally, is technically a Jesuit priest, and he's writing this book. And the passenger says, what's the title of the book? And he says, it's called Why Am I Afraid to Tell You Who I Am? And the passenger says, oh, do you want me to tell you? And the author said, no, that's the name of the book. And he said, no, I know, but do you want me to tell you? And he said, sure. And he said, his response was, it's because it's all I've got. If I'm not enough in your eyes, and I have put my worth in you believing I'm enough, what happens to me if you don't think I'm enough anymore? I just crumble. So you and I have talked about this idea of how many people in your life, how many people listening can truly, truly, truly authentically say, I know I'm enough. I can stand in front of a mirror and feel confident. I can walk in front of a room and feel complete grace with who I am. Mm-hmm. I can stand somewhere and say, I have no idea how the heck to score tennis because that still makes no sense to me. I don't have any idea how the hell to do that. You and I've had this conversation. I don't know sports at all. I'm pretty much not going to call you out live here, but
and so as 15:30, I'll just tell you, right?
And so like as a gent, it's not uncommon to be among other gents. Sports come up. If my self-worth was tied to knowing sports, like I'd be a mess.
That's true. I've never seen you be self-conscious of that.
No, because I don't know. I have no problem saying, I don't know. I could turn a wrench on a car. Yeah, I could build a building.
A lot of manly things.
There's a lot of things. I could swing an axe, but I don't know anything about sports. Fair. So having to find yourself in a spot where you know where your worth comes from. Insecure overachieving is a place where your capability outpaces your identity. You don't have confidence in who you are. I heard a line recently that I loved. I've used it multiple times with clients because I think it's so resonant. It is that for insecure overachievers, one of the things I want them to do is I want them to upgrade their internal narrative to align with their external impact because they continue to believe that the impact they're having isn't enough. So the internal narrative of self is compromised all the time.
I want to pause on this because it took me a second there to recognize this. It's if you're having a lot of impact, do you often enough recognize it, internalize it, and use that narrative to fulfill yourself? Or do you have the impact and find the ways in which it's not enough? You didn't get the kudos for it. Is that
100%?
And the reason I think this matters is because many listening will probably align with this. It not only feels worse when you're questioning that, it again lowers your ability to have impact.
You show up worse.
Exactly. Yep. If you don't recognize it and you question it, then you do less. You play smaller. You are more tiptoeing around what you want to accomplish.
I can't help but think about, there's this moment, it's a couple of years ago with one of our colleagues. We're at an offsite event. This gentleman comes up and it's just relevant. So I'll share it. You can edit it out if we don't like it.
he's like, my favorite.
He's like a big dude. He's he's not a small man. Right. I'm a slight guy. And so like this dude comes up and he's a pretty big guy. He's got a deep voice. But he's meek as he's interacting with me. And he was like, Hey Sean, I don't know if you remember me, but like 3 years ago, you like were chatting at this certain situation and you were giving this keynote on this topic and you said this thing and that's become a mantra in my household. And my kids, could repeat that because it's something core and fundamental to like how we raise our kids and what we do. Mm-hmm. And I said, Matt's incredible. Thanks. And walked away. And I turned and looked at our colleague and they just had this sort of shit eating grin at me. And they said, did you hear that? And I was like, yeah. No, I know. And they were like, no, did you hear that?
Yeah.
Will you let it land on the real impact that you're having and believe in self? When does that happen?
So we're going to move into solution orientation in a minute. And for those who identify as insecure overachiever and they've walked through here, we've given them some drips and you just gave one right there, which is the idea of in order to fill that hole to an extent, we have to let it land when people give us positive feedback.
Yeah.
And there is an exercise that taught me this really bluntly, almost in a scary way.
Yeah.
I did it as a participant in a workshop and it's called And Furthermore.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to give a quick synopsis of what And Furthermore is? More importantly, why do we do it and what is the impact?
Yeah. Okay. So let's start with the frequency with which we walk around with an empty bucket. So if we use Tom Rath's book, great book called How Full Is Your Bucket? There's a phenomenal one for kids. If you don't know this, it is called How Full Is Your Bucket? My kids have read this. They know it. They read it. It's amazing. And the general concept behind it is that we have psychological needs and when we get those needs met, we are better able to feel satisfied and to act in service of others and lead and do all of the incredible things that we need to do. So,
by the way, if you're interested in psychological needs, we alluded to it in a previous episode, but make sure you subscribe or whatever to the podcast. We will be having a full episode on that. Continue.
So in one of the workshops we run, what we constantly talk about is we walk around in states of insecurity, states of distress, states of insecure overachiever, oftentimes informed by our view of self. So sometimes it's easier to think your way into behaving. Other times it's easier to behave your way into thinking. So there is a behavior we ask people to do in this workshop that is designed to move them toward thinking this way. Mm. And it sounds so simple, and it is always so hard. My first time doing it was really hard. It literally just sounds like this. At the end of the workshop, we ask people, if someone here did something over these last few days that you appreciated, they shared something that allowed you to connect more effectively. They listened in a moment. They sat with you at dinner, whatever that thing was. And you want to say thank you to them. We ask you to. Now that part's easy. People are relatively good at throwing out comments all the time or compliments. So let's say the person says like, hey, Chris, I just wanted to say, I appreciate the willingness that you have to kind of walk through some of your stories because it really helped me anchor my experiences on that framework. It was really useful. Now, the common thing people do is they go, thanks. I really appreciated what you did. And they just lob it right back at them.
Give the compliment back.
So it does two things. Number one, you don't let it land. So you don't feel it. Number two, which is probably the most powerful for me as a harmonizer. Again, those thoughts are on earlier episodes. It discounts the other person. So if you come to me and you give me a compliment and I go, yeah, and then I just give you one, you just put thought into it. Or one of the worst ones is if people say it was nothing. They actually are asking you, they authentically care and are asking you about it, or they're giving you that compliment. Okay, so they give the compliment. Your job is to say thank you. And furthermore, it's something that I thoughtfully work on. I really try to intentionally create a space where people can work through their own experiences through my vulnerability. So we ask you to let it land. When people do this, it is a stumble. It is awkward. It is hard. So we're constantly in a spot where accolade, acknowledgement, psychological need is being given, but we discount it. We deflect it. A lot of times because we think about worthiness issues, we just don't feel like it's there. So when we do this, what we're trying to do is we're trying to install a behavior, as awkward or as uncomfortable it may be, that creates a space for you to start letting your impact land, upgrading your internal narrative with your external impact. Mm. And people want to give you this all the time. Can we, as an insecure overachiever, start believing what people tell us, start hearing it, and shift into a secure overachiever? I'm not going to ask you to stop grinding. I know there's a self-worth piece that's tied into that. But can you do that through a lens of confidence, security, knowing what you're bringing and the value that you have, not from a place of insecurity and dissatisfaction?
And I want to bring it home with what you just said. Why this specific activity and many of the things for anyone who labels himself an insecure overachiever to think about? It's because a lot of it is looking to feel secure in who they are, not just secure in their ability to achieve. We said this on an earlier episode. It's one of my favorite quotes. Confidence is determined by the memories you choose to remember. If you do a lot of things successfully, but don't inventory them, it's hard to use them to build confidence.
Yeah.
Right?
1,000%.
So people can be doing things and still feel insecure because they don't inventory it. So ultimately, the goal here is the goal of many of the things we discuss, which is self-examination. I mean, we have to be willing to ask, where do I fall on this? Does this hinder me? Do I have this? Do I not? And then that must come before being able to do something about it.
All growth starts with self-awareness.
Yes.
Increase self-awareness to understand that some of what might be driving my behavior is actually felt levels of insecurity and misattribution of my worth.
Exactly.
So How do I take stock of that, take inventory of that, and systematically start working through the value that I bring, the worth that I bring, the self-worth that I have through a healthy vantage point so that I can more effectively lead and serve those that have been willing to be guided by me and those that I love.
It's a journey that we'll continue to take here and want to help others go through. So thanks for bringing it, Sean.
You bet, bud.
All right, soon. See ya.
Thanks for joining us in the arena. If you want to keep growing, the best thing you can do is join our weekly newsletter. It's where we break down the biggest ideas from the podcast and share the tools and frameworks we use every day to help leaders live and lead differently. You can sign up for that at door2.com/signup. That is DORTWO.com/signup. And if you enjoyed the conversation, make sure to follow or subscribe wherever you listen. If you prefer to watch, head over to YouTube and check out our full video episodes filmed right here in our on-site studio. And remember, all growth starts with self-awareness. We'll see you next time in the arena.